chapter 26. We're going to move around a little bit in the scripture tonight, but it won't be too much. In Acts 26, it tells a story about Agrippa. And Agrippa and Paul had an interaction. Let me get over there to that real quick. Acts 26, 28. Acts 26:28, and this is the verse that's kind of triggered the lesson tonight. It says, "Then Agrippa said unto Paul, Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian." And I got this, I started thinking about that term, almost thou persuadest me. King Agrippa has just now met what, unfortunately, in his life is going to be an almost life. He almost grabbed a hold of something that could change everything for him. You see, the way this kind of worked out, Paul was on trial. And King Agrippa said, hey, Paul can speak for himself. So Paul started out speaking. He didn't have any problem speaking. That's what God made him to do, to preach the gospel. And he started out, if you look back at verse 2, he said, I think myself happy. And you know, when somebody's in a mess and they're on trial, and they start it with, I think myself happy, that'll grab somebody's attention. He gave his testimony, and he told them about the light on the Damascus Road and being under conviction. Y'all remember the terminology? He said, you can't kick against the pricks. In other words, when the Holy Ghost is pulling on you and prodding you, you can't fight that. He talked about how God had sent him to the Gentiles to bring the gospel. And when he ended in verse 27, asking King Agrippa, he said, believest thou the prophets? I know that thou believest. And Agrippa said, almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian. It kind of tells me that he was hearing it. It was waking him up, but he just wasn't quite ready to give what it takes to make that next move. So it got me thinking about the word almost. And you can drop that word and everything changes for Agrippa. Take it out of that. If he said, thou persuadest me to be a Christian, everything would have changed in his life from that point on. I know it did for me. Everything changed for me. But with the almost, nothing changed for Agrippa in this situation. This is not hand grenades and horseshoes, the old saying. You can't just get close. You can't just almost. You got to go all the way in with Christ. And almost can be a horrible word in our lives. I remember watching a football game, and the score was into overtime, and they were just fighting back and forth, trying to make yardage. And the running back for the offense had the ball. They were on the goal line, and as he was crossing the goal line into the end zone, he fumbled. I mean, he was inches away from winning the game. And I just remember it because he was sitting on the sideline, and he'd already, you know, how they have to talk about everything and replay it, and they replayed the fumble over and over. And he's sitting on the sideline with a towel over his head, you know, bowed down. And I thought, you know, almost he was a hero. But in that situation, he was not almost a hero. He was a zero. Almost a hero is not, hey, that was pretty good, or that was awesome, or that was just short of wonderful. It's all the way to nothing. And that's where Agrippa landed in this situation. He left with nothing. He had the story told to him by one of the greatest preachers that's ever existed. And he said, almost. So if Paul can't persuade, I wonder who could. Y'all ever lost a game by 1 point? Almost won. If we'd just done one more thing, or if we'd just made a little bit of a move, or if I'd been a little bit faster, or a little bit smarter, we'd have won. I'd rather get beat by 30 points than 1 point. Almost winning is horrible. Almost is that word starting to haunt me. Agrippa almost being persuaded, he fell short of receiving glory in his life. I don't want for me or for you to lead an almost life. Almost receiving Christ into my life. Almost living for God. Almost getting my destructive behaviors under control. Randy, you got destructive behaviors? Well, yeah. Don't you? Are you just got all these blind spots that everybody else can see your destructive behaviors and you can't see them? You've got them. Almost making meaningful friendships. Almost contributing enough of myself to make a difference to others. Almost committing to tithe. Almost finding God's path for my life. Almost using the talent that God's given me for the purpose that He created me for. I don't want to fall short in any of those areas. And I don't want you to either. I'm personally scared to death of living a life without purpose. That scares me. I've seen it. I've seen people get to the end and they live their entire lives for themselves and it's empty. It's sad. I don't want any part of it. Yet, I'm a very selfish person. So I've always got that risk running in my life. I didn't really mean to get up here and bash myself tonight, but for some reason it's coming out. And I will say, we got to guard ourselves against an almost life. Success isn't the measure of whether we've achieved what we want to in life. Purpose is the measure. Purpose is what gives us our meaning. Wealth is great, but it's better to be broke because it doesn't bring the peace that Christ can bring. You can have all the money in the world and still be in turmoil. You know, Brother Carl Partain talked about bringing peace into a hospital room in one of his sermons, or his sermon up there Wednesday night. And, you know, we felt that peace in a hospital room. And you can't buy that. You can't conjure it. You can't convince it. You can't make it happen. That's a real peace. I remember, I think Riley was about 2 years old and she was going to have a procedure. And, you know, I know it wasn't really a big deal, but we're young parents. It was a big deal to us. And, you know, it's never a big deal when it's happening to somebody else. Our situation was nothing like what the preacher talked about his son, where the doctor had told him he'd be better off dead. I have never experienced anything like that. That's real worry right there. And he was able to get peace in that situation. So I'm not trying to pretend we had anything in that caliber of trouble or trauma. But I can tell you that same peace that helped him when he was in trouble helped me in my little old trouble. And it was real. You know, that song that was sung on Sunday morning resonated really well with me. If it matters to you, it matters to him. So King Agrippa, he had it all by the world standards. I mean, he was a king. He was a man of royalty, a man of honor, a man of position, a man of great wealth. He told people to do something, they went and did it. He was the king, for crying out loud. A man with the ability to influence greatly. But without God, he led an almost life. Let's turn over. I'm going to take another example to bring out this word almost. Okay, let's go over to Matthew 19, verse 16. Matthew 19, 16. This is a common story, but I don't know if we've ever talked about it in the framework of almost. Matthew 19, 16. And behold, one came and said unto him, Good master, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life? Verse 17, and he said unto him, Why callest thou me good? There is none good but one, that is God. But if thou wilt enter to life, keep the commandments. And he saith unto him, which, Jesus? He said unto him, which? And Jesus said, thou shalt do no murder, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness. So Jesus is kind of setting this young rich man up. He was setting him up to understand that even though he was good, maybe he was good, he was just almost good enough. In verse 19 it says, honor thy father and thy mother, and thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. So when he said, love thy neighbor as thyself, this should have turned this man's light on that he was falling short. I'd say most of us don't measure up to the measuring stick of love thy neighbor as thyself. I know that I like my neighbors, and I like my friends, and I like my family, but I love me some self. I'm not going to lie. Is it not true? I think a lot about keeping myself protected and safe and fed and watered and whatever else I need. So when he said, love thy neighbor as thyself, the young man should have realized that he was falling short. In verse 20 it says, the young man said unto him, all these things have I kept from my youth. What lack I yet? Oh, okay, he's still not getting it. Jesus says he's still not getting it. He's still not getting that he may have some issues. And Jesus said to him, okay, in verse 21, if thou wilt be perfect, go and sell all that thou hast and give it to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven, and come and follow me. But when the young man heard that saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. You see, he almost committed to Jesus. He almost made a transaction there. Now, Jesus didn't need his stuff. Jesus didn't need it. If Jesus wanted to feed the poor, he'd feed the poor. He could break a little bit of fish into a lot of food. He didn't need this young man. The young man needed to sell his stuff so that he could put Jesus in front of his stuff. And I'd say, God knows when he can bless us and when he cannot. You think about, most of us are parents in here. If you have a child, you mostly want to do good things for them. You mostly want to give and provide and give them plenty. But the second you see them acting spoilt or ungrateful or abusing the things that you provided, then you start wanting to pull it back. You say, no, you're not ready. You're not quite ready for this yet. God sees us the same way. He's not going to give us to the point that he destroys us. That's what Satan does. Satan promotes us to destruction. God will destroy to save us. God will take away. But his preference is to do good things to his children and to give to us and promote us if we can handle it. So let's look at in Luke chapter 5, verse 10. There's a verse here that talks about, and I'll say it's something that all of the disciples had in common. Luke 5, verses 10. And it says there, and so was also James and John, the sons of Zebedee, which were partners with Simon. And Jesus said unto Simon, fear not, from henceforth thou shalt catch men. Verse 11, and when they brought their ships to land, they forsook all and followed him. It was an all-in commitment. They forsook all and followed him. To follow Jesus means to say no to some things and say yes to him. We can't say yes to everything in the world and also say yes to Jesus. That's not the commitment he's looking for. It's not a profession of our faith. It costs something. It means to trust his path over our own logic. Some of you are like me and you like for the logic to work. You like for the pieces to come together. I like for it all to work out. And I like to be able to balance the scales. And I like to be able to understand. That's one reason I like that song we sung tonight so much. I don't understand a lot, but I hear farther along. Maybe I'll get to understand some of it. The Lord doesn't work that way. He doesn't lay out all the pieces so that it can all work. He lays out the rules, and He gives us boundaries to be obedient within. And then we're to have faith that if we live within those boundaries, the things work out and good things happen. Not always good things, but for our best happens if we can live with those within those boundaries. He can bless obedience every time. He can never bless disobedience. So it means to deny the desires of our belly, our selfishness, our need to get more, to be bigger, to expand. Us humans have a great need to expand and be bigger and get more. You never get high enough. I was reading an article the other day, and there was this gentleman. He was, you know, in one of the wealth categories, I'll say. You know, let's say he had $5 million, and he was talking to people who had $100 million. And they said, well, don't you want to grow and be bigger? He said, nope, I got something you'll never have. I've got enough. It can be 5 million, it can be whatever. But to achieve enough is a great place to be in life. And I'm not just talking about money, I'm using money as a reference. It's about trusting Jesus' path over our own. So I ask, you know, what are we going to do with Jesus? What are we going to do with Jesus? Jesus is presented to us in this church all the time. He's presented to us in this gospel. What are we going to do with Jesus? King Agrippa had a decision to make. The rich young man had a decision to make. In that moment, they did something with Jesus. They decided, no. No. No, it would cost me too much. It would be embarrassing. It would be a label that I'd have to carry. I've seen some pretty amazing things in my life. I'm certainly not a world traveler or anything, but this summer, my family and I, we took a bigger trip than we normally took and spent a little over a week out west, kind of seeing that country out there. And it's beautiful. One thing we got to see, one thing I like the most is Sedona, Arizona. If you guys ever get a chance to go, I recommend it. But we went from there up to the Grand Canyon. And Jennifer and I had seen the Grand Canyon before, you know, maybe 20 years ago. We did it on our honeymoon 22 years ago. And I thought it was amazing when I saw it. I mean, it was grand. many of you been out there? It's something to really see. Well, you know, we had the girls with us this time, and we had scheduled 2 or 3 days there in that area. And if you've been there, there's nothing in the area but the Grand Canyon. You know, it's hard to get good restaurants. There's not, you know, good access to things or whatever. So really, what you get out of the canyon is what's going to happen there. So we went to the canyon, and we watched the sun set, and then we watched another sunset, and then we saw it during the day, and it was kind of misty, and it was, you know, and you could just go miles and miles, and it's the same Grand Canyon. We even took a boat ride down kind of in the canyon. All great. But, you know, you're kind of looking at the Grand Canyon, and we go, well, I'm bored. I mean, it didn't take long to get bored of something that magnificent. That Grand Canyon didn't change my life. It's something to see, but I couldn't just spend too many days with it. So one of those days that we had allotted to the Grand Canyon, we started looking, you know, Googling, well, where else could we go? What else could we do? So we said, well, one of the closest cities is Flagstaff, and there was a big fire in Flagstaff while we were there. There was a mountain basically on fire, one of the big wildfires like you see on TV. So we were kind of routing the path going, well, I don't want to take a plane ride, come out here at West and burn up in a forest fire. I mean, that wouldn't look good on Facebook at all. We can't do that. But we saw that we'd be several miles away or whatever, and we rode by the fire, and you know, it was starting to get kind of dark, and at night, fire really shows itself. There's a whole mountain on fire. That was something to see. I was pretty impressed. Didn't change my life. But, you know, this is all happening. One day I've seen the Grand Canyon. In the same day, I've seen my first major wildfire. It's a pretty good vacation so far. Good news is there's a lot of land out west that has no structure on it. So it was just burning a mountain, literally. Nobody was losing houses or anything, so that was a good thing. But they were worried about the wind changing. So we went to Flagstaff. That event was to go to an observatory. And, you know, it was just like a, you know, several hour thing. And I know it's kind of nerdy, but that's a little bit of who we are. So we sat in a lecture on dark matter, which was really, really interesting. I know, I'm sorry. I'm starting to bore you. But this observatory was the place where they discovered Pluto. We actually stood and touched the telescope that discovered Pluto. Anybody impressed? I touched it, I saw it, it didn't change my life. There was a scheduled event that night where you could go look in these high-powered telescopes that were more modern than the one that found Pluto. They had them set up outside. And by then, the wind's blowing, it's getting kind of cold. I'm not loving the observatory trip. But, you know, we're in it, right? Whatever. It's a little uncomfortable. We were dressed for out west weather. Didn't know it got so cold tonight. Stood in a long line to get up to this telescope. And it probably took 10 minutes to get up there. And they told me to look through the eyepiece. And they said, you're gonna see something that you'll never see again in your life. We've trained this telescope in on two stars. And they named the stars, and I have no idea what they said. And they said, this is to capture this view on a night like this is something special. So I looked through the telescope, and what I saw was two little pin lights, as tiny as can be. And they said, these are bigger than the sun. And I'm going, I stood in line for this. Two blurry little pin lights through an eyepiece. Those stars did not change my life. Matter of fact, I had trouble not being rude. Actually, I think I was rude. I'm going to go ahead and tell you. So none of those things changed my life. But I'll tell you what has changed my life. When Jesus convicted me, and when He saved me, it was a 180 degrees. I was headed one direction, and I changed directions in my life. There is evidence. I'm not a perfect Christian. I'm not even a good Christian. I'm just going to tell you. There's a whole lot of areas I fall short. But where I was going wouldn't have landed me right here tonight. I'll tell you that. 180 degree turn. And I know y'all took geometry. That means the other way. My home is different because I met Jesus. My marriage is different because I met Jesus. My kids are different because I met Jesus. Everything is different because Jesus is in our lives and in my life. So what do we do with Jesus? Agrippa, he was almost persuaded. The rich man was almost good enough. I had a coworker come to me the other day, and he was upset, which corporate America will do that to you. There's some bad days in corporate America. But he sat down, and he goes, I just need to talk. I just need some advice. I said, okay, yeah, let's talk. He said, well, I know you kind of come from a faith-based belief. I know your foundation's in that religious stuff. I said, yeah, I guess so. So he told me his problem, and I said, well, you came to me, and, you know, in corporate America, you can't really talk a lot of religion and specifics. I said, so you came to a guy that you know is faith-based. I got a story out of the Bible that I'd love to tell you that addresses this situation. You okay if I tell it to you? He said, yeah, okay, go ahead. So I told him about Stephen. Stephen in the Bible, he had folks coming against him because he was telling the truth. And the Pharisees and the legal folks of the day and the religious folks of the day were attacking him. And it says they were gnashing upon him with their teeth. They had him on trial and they were just tearing him apart. And if you read those verses, it's over in Acts 7. It says, Stephen held his ground and he kept the face of an angel. Through all of that, he kept the face of an angel. And then when he was eventually stoned after that trial, he knelt down and cried out with a loud voice, Lord, lay not this sin to their charge. And when he had said this, the Bible says, he fell asleep. So my co-worker went on to tell me about how all the world religions have, you know, similar ideology and similar story. And he starts waxing about, you know, his views on the world religions and so forth. And I'm thinking, okay, I mean, you came to me, but all right, whatever, you know, I'm playing along. And but I'll tell you, as the gospel does, the gospel started kind of working a little bit. It took him about a week, but he came back and he says, you know, that discussion and what we talked about, it's really made a difference. It's really changed. It's really changed things. I've made some adjustment. I'm not talking about a conversion or anything, but I'm just talking about a seed that could probably maybe germinate, you know. Because it's amazing the answers that the gospel has for us, if we'll seek them. So he gets to decide. He gets to decide what he wants to do with Jesus. But his situation is no different than the rest of us. We all get to decide what we do with Jesus and what we do with the gospel. So we all get to decide, are we almost persuaded? Are we almost good enough? Are we almost listening to what God has for us? Are we almost being blessed because we're almost tithing? Are we almost making it to church? I almost made it. I almost made it the other day. Didn't quite make it, but I almost made it. That's a good service that you almost made, isn't it? Or can we be like Stephen, steadfast in our position with Christ, solid demeanor, angelic countenance, full of forgiveness and sacrifice? That's what Stephen did. He stood his ground in the worst situation, in the worst pressure, and during a stoning said, lay not this charge upon them. And what did Jesus do during that event? Jesus stood up. It's the only time the Bible mentions him standing up. Jesus does care what we're going through, and he does honor obedience, and he honored Stephen's obedience by recording in all of time right here that he stood up. He was willing to lay. Are we willing to lay down our life, lay it all down if we were asked to do so? So what will we do with Jesus? With Jesus, there is no such thing. With Jesus, there is no such thing as an almost life. Thank you for your attention.